Hello again. Dr. Christy Smurl here from healthiervibrations.com. Today I wanted to share with you a short segment that was recorded live from one of my classes on Ayurvedic anatomy and physiology. During this segment, I discuss the principles that are essential for understanding or mastering anything related to the physiological function or dosha called vata. I hope you enjoy this segment, and if you're interested in learning more about full-length classes that I offer online, visit my website, healthiervibrations.com. Covering today, I want to make sure first everybody knows, whether they're here in person, online, or listening later on, that we understand Ayurveda is a science and an art of living and well-being. It is a science and art that we can apply to ourselves only with proper levels of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So if we don't have proper levels of knowledge in the art and the science, what we think is going to be good for us could be detrimental to us. Mm-hmm. So we want to really study well, and we want to make sure that we always caution ourselves before advising others, that we truly know whether or not we are an authority in the subject, and before we give ourselves any type of treatment or modification in our own health, that you have either determined you are an authority in the subject, are well studied, well researched, or you have cleared it by your family doctor, etc. But today we're going to be talking more about the fundamentals, the advanced fundamental principles of Ayurveda. So let's go ahead and turn to slide 3 in your handout. And I want to go over first a quick pre-quiz before we go into a pre-crash course, okay? So first, let's ask ourselves, do we know the basic principles of the Panchamahabhutas? Yes. So the Panchamahabhutas are our 5 elements. Mm-hmm. And we know that we have fire, water, air, ether, and earth, right? Then we want to ask ourselves, what Panchamahabhutas make which of the 3 doshas? Mm-hmm. We know that doshas are the 3 physiological forces that control every function of the human body. This was a really hard concept for me to grasp in my training, because I come from a medical, Western medical background, and for me to be told that Pitta controls my metabolism, I was like, I'm not sure about that concept yet. And it took me a long time to overcome my preconceived notions and my pre-training, because I felt that I knew more because of Western medicine, but Ayurveda is a beautiful complement and makes complete sense when integrated. So when we look at these 3 doshas, we understand that they control every physiological function of the body. What are our 3 doshas?
Vata,
Pitta, Kapha. And what elements constitute Pitta?
Fire and water.
Fire and water. Kapha.
Earth and water.
Vata.
Air and space.
Air and space. Yeah. Beautiful. So we're going to take a look at these basics before we begin. So we discussed our 5 Panchamahabhutas. We have our cooler elements, our wind and our ether. We have our fire element, our earth element, which is grounding and stable. And then we have our water element. So when we take a look at how those combine, we learn that the combination of these elements make up the characteristics of the doshas. So when we take a look at Pitta, the first thing we have is fire combined with water. So when we go back to our basic anatomy and physiology of Ayurveda, we understand what the function of Pitta is. Now what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be going past this Vata Pitta Kapha concept and looking at all of the sub-doshas within each. Okay. So we know that Kapha is earth and water. We understand earth is very heavy, dense, sthira, guru. We understand that water has the capability of many physiological functions within the body, but when we combine these two, we understand kapha at the elemental level. So I always go back and harp on the elemental constitution of each dosha, because that gives us the ability to understand. So let's just take a look at the qualities of vata again as a review. So vata, we know, is the physiological function in the body of movement. Movement of everything, from the heart rate, to the breath, to the nerve impulses, to the movement signals for the musculoskeletal system, to the movement of the gut in peristalsis, swallowing, sneezing, flatulence, urination, menstruation, ejaculation, all of these are movement related, and vata needs to be functioning correctly. Now we understand that vata is air and space. Think about air and space for a moment. They're very light, they're minute, they're mobile. So that's where we come and we understand the qualities of vata. And we've learned in our basic anatomy and physiology course of Ayurveda that the qualities first, we have ruksha. And ruksha is dry, as well as we look at the element of roughness. Mm-hmm. When we take a look at the element of vata, we understand that one of its gunas are the qualities, is lagu, which is light. Mm-hmm. So air and space, there's not heavy density involved. We understand that vata is shita, cold. We understand that it is kara, rough. We understand it's sukshma, minute. As well as we understand that it is the guna of chala, which is mobile. So when we think of vata, and we look at the inner translation within our bodies, the microcosm, and outside of our bodies, the macrocosm. Let's take a look at the weather. So right now it's been cold, shita. Has it been dry? Well, it's been raining where we're at right now, which is more water element. However, the cold seems to have trumped all the other qualities when I look at a vata constituted person, a person with a vata prakruti. In this weather being cold, I see their skin beginning to dry, their bowels becoming dry, their hair and nails becoming dry. They're not demonstrating the water element in our current rainy season. However, if we look at a different prakruti or constitution of a person, take myself for instance, I'm more pitta and kapha. So I am becoming more prone in this weather, not to dryness. So I don't have dryness in my body. I'm pitta and I'm kapha. This is moist and dense and hot. Even in this cold weather, I'm still hot. Not overheated, but hot. Whereas this wetter rain is translating in my body as moistness. And whereas the home of kapha, we'll look at it again, is in the head and neck and chest region. So when I'm doing my pranayama sadhana, I'm noticing the need for an extra tissue or so. So we have to make sure that we're taking into consideration the macrocosm outside of us and what it's doing internally. So when we take a look at vata, we typically associate winter as the potential of aggravating vata. Well, only in a vata prakruti per se, or a vikruti of vata. Somebody who is vata imbalanced may become more vata imbalanced in the winter. Whereas somebody who is a kapha prakriti or a kapha vikriti is more likely to become kapha imbalanced in the winter. But if you look at the seasonal changes, winter time is where we accumulate kapha. Even though we're still being interacted with the environmental cold, kapha is also cold. So we really want to have a firm grasp of all of these concepts. Mm-hmm. So when I finished my doctorate, as well as now it's being required in a lot of the certificate programs for Ayurveda, we learn what are called shlokas. Shlokas are recited oral remembrance of the principles of a lot of different sciences, but particularly in Ayurveda, it's an oral tradition. So today I want each of us to learn the shlokas for the vata, pitta, and kapha elements. So the first shloka, if you take a look at the slide and the notes, we have Patra Ruksha Lagu Shita Kara Sukshma Chalo Anilaha. So when we take a look at this, we have all of the elements. Ruksha. Let's just say Ruksha. Make sure that we're saying it correctly. Ruksha. Lagu.
Lagu.
Shita.
Shita.
Kara.
Kara.
Now remember, when there's a K and an H, there's a slight K, K, but we won't go too far down the slide of Sanskrit pronunciation. Sukshma.
Sukshma.
Chala.
Chala.
So when we have the shloka, we have Tatra, Ruksha, Lagu, Shita, Kara, Sukshma, Chalo, Anila. Let's say that together very slowly first. Tatra, Ruksha, Lagu, Shita, Kara, Sukshma, Chala, Anila. Okay, again. Tatra, Ruksha, Lagu, Shita, Kara, Sukshma, Chalo Anila. Okay. Now there are different pronunciations depending on where you are studying and how you are pronunciating things. But you do want to be mindful of the pronunciation to the best of your knowledge, to the best of your ability. People who are well studied in Ayurveda should have at least a firm grip on how the words are said. But depending on who your teacher is, where on the globe, particularly what dialect of Indian language they speak, you want to be mindful that there are a lot of variations as well as spelling variations. The reason why you'll find so many spelling variations is there is written word and then there is Sanskrit. So, for instance, when you have a ch, when it's written in Sanskrit, you may only have a C with a special denotation over the letter. So just take that into consideration. Also, when you see people write O-O rather than a U with a line over it, it's the same thing. So it's more like phonetics versus Sanskrit. All right, let's go over that again. The gunas of vata, the shloka. Tatra, Ruksha, Lagu, Shita, Kara, Sukshma, Chalo, Anila. Let's do it again. Tatra, Ruksha, Lagu, Shita, Kara, Rukshma, Sukshma, Chalo, Anila. When I went through my doctorate program, we had about an hour and a half of shloka requirements for our final. We had to stand in front of the teacher and they would say, give me the gunas of Vata. Mm-hmm. And you just had to have them all come out. And this is more of a matter of just giving you a flashcard to remember all the qualities. Because the more you can ingrain the qualities, the more the nutrition makes sense. Mm-hmm. The more the herbology makes sense. The more the prakruti, vikruti, and opposites or similarities make sense.
Are the shlokas used for any other purpose other than
academia?
Like memorization, just academia. It's not something you would use.
Wouldn't sing it in a song.
Okay, just asking.
I mean, if you really
you
want to make a Vata song, you
could. A Vata song.
Yeah.
So the Tatra and the Anila at the end, what?
The introduction.
It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
And in the
saying that Vata is and
got
it, you know.
And, okay.
Yeah.
I figured that.
So melodic.
Yeah.
So one more time, the definition of shloka.
It's a phrase. a way of passing down the oral tradition. Now let's take a look at Vata in the anatomy aspect of it. For some of you, this will be review, but we really want to know, where is the home of Vata in each dosha? Where does it initially begin to accumulate in the body? So we understand there's five different levels of disease. In the beginning stages of disease formation, the dosha will become aggravated or accumulated in the place of its home within the body first, typically, unless it's an external trauma, etc. So when we understand fully where the home of the dosha is, when we start to see symptomatology or changes in our own bodies, let's say we're doing our yoga sadhana of asana, and for some reason our backs are really bothering us. First thing that comes to mind, Vata. Okay. If I have my sadhana and I'm trying to do Bhastrika pranayam and I have snotty nose, immediately kapha, because that's the home of it. So we want to catch these things within ourselves when it is starting at the accumulation phase within the home of that dosha. Not after it spills out past its home into the rasa, becoming mobilized by Vata and moving to other locations in the body. Okay, so remember that it always accumulates in the home, and that's where you want to catch it first, before it spreads out into other areas of the body where it does not naturally accumulate. So with Vata, we understand that the main sites, the first one is the colon. So the colon is where we start seeing our symptoms of gas and bloating, yeah? In Ayurveda, the term for colon is pakkvashaya. Okay, so we know that when we have colon symptoms, what are some other colon symptoms of Vata? Constipation. And constipation needs to be differentiated between Vata constipation and kapha constipation. So kapha constipation tends to be more thick, heavy, and slow. Guru, manda, sthira, and Vata, we see completely different set of constipation symptoms, like dry,
rabbit pellets.
Hard, rabbit-like pellets with hard pain sometimes, and gas and bloating. So why is this important as yoga practitioners? because good yogic practitioners understand in order to cultivate higher levels of prana, in order to move into those higher levels of consciousness, the body must be established first. Mm-hmm. So when we're in malasana pose and we're kindly reminded that we should have hopefully had a defecation prior to our yoga practice, mm-hmm. upon awakening in our perfect world, we want to ask ourselves, what dosha is out of balance? Mm-hmm. Okay. So when we also take a look at vata, one of the other homes of vata is guda, which is the rectum. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's right along with our colon and our shroni, our pelvis. So far we haven't left the pelvis. Mm-hmm. We're still in the pelvis. We also have our low back. We're just going to the posterior portion, our kati. When we take a look at the rest of the home of vata, we start moving into the legs, the thighs, the sakti, but we also see symptoms in the ears. So the home of vata also resides in the ears. That's a long distance from our pelvis. But this is important because as yogic practitioners, beyond asana, we are trying to maintain also our sense organs. When the sense organs become altered, our perception of the world becomes altered. Our incoming data is not as fine and perfected. So symptoms of vata moving to its home location, the ears, we would start seeing things like ringing of the ears, mm-hmm. that buzzing sensation, dryness in the ears. Okay, whereas if we take a look at the ears from a different standpoint of dosha, how about if we have excessive cerumen in the ears, excessive ear wax? That would be a kapha imbalance. Okay, all right. Now we also want to understand that the home of vata resides in the bones, mm-hmm. all the bones. But more importantly, we see symptoms usually begin in the lower portion body. So knees, thighs, feet, ankles. So when we're looking at vata, we want to remember the bones and then also our sense of touch. So the sense of touch is very important when we're looking at our senses, our input of information. How do we treat our sense of touch? And is our sense of touch at its most optimal functioning? I mean, how many times do we wake up in the morning and ask ourselves, is my sense of touch appropriate? Is my sense of touch healthy? Well, let's take a moment to ask, why would our sense of touch become deranged? Other than vata. So when vata is deranged, how does it affect our sense of touch? We start seeing things like numbness, tingling, and abnormal sensations, pain mm-hmm. sensations also. But what do we do to ourselves to change our perception of touch in a not healthy way?
Withdraw from other people.
Complete withdrawal from any sensory touch can cause an abnormality, or it can be a restorative measure as well. Mm-hmm. I find that typically people have too much or too little touch. So when we have too little touch, that can be a good thing, a withdrawal of the senses, so that when the touch is there, it's more enlivened, it's mm-hmm. more perceived. But sometimes when we have no sense of touch or very little touch stimuli, when you receive small amounts of touch stimuli, it's aggravating. Mm-hmm. It's sensory overload. Mm-hmm. What are some examples, though, of abnormally high sense of touch in what we do to ourselves to alter our sense of touch?
Well, we overstimulate it with physically with chemicals and with different, you know, products. And
so that's a good point. One thing is care of the skin. And we learned in Ayurvedic lifestyles, if you haven't taken that class yet, the process of self-abhyanga in the mornings, applying oil to the skin in the mornings, not perfume, not chemicals. Every chemical in every single one of your products is absorbed transcutaneously. It goes directly into your system. So we want to look at what we're putting on our skin. However, if we don't properly oil our skin or have proper oleation, internal snigdha or snehana, excuse me, as well as external snehana, oiling of the skin, the skin becomes dry and the perception is altered. Mm-hmm. Think of dry, cracked hands. Mm-hmm. The sense of touch is not going to be the same. But also think of skin that has become dehydrated. Skin that has become altered in the way that the sense of touch is not perceived properly. But what about abuse of that sense organ or abnormal use of that sense organ? Mm-hmm. Who knows anybody who is a constant of touching, 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 touching?
You mean themselves or others? Or does it
themselves.
Okay, yeah.
So let's take, for instance, a dog. Okay? There are some dogs, for whatever emotional reasons, always want to be on, touching, or touched. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily a healthy demonstration. And there are some people who have an abnormal attachment to the concept of being touched. Mm-hmm. Or touching themselves. Now, that could go into a whole nother discussion. But we want to take a look at how we're using our sense of touch in our daily lives. And how does that reflect upon the dosha of vata and the sense organ of touch? Receiving touch, translating touch, understanding the importance of touch. I loved reading years ago about the studies that were done about just hugging. Physical human contact and how it's a natural antidepressant to stimulate levels of appropriate dopamine. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be human touch contact. Mm-hmm. It could be a cat, a dog.
They say that. You know, people who have pets, dog, even fish.
Yeah.
If they, you know, look at them, their stress level goes down.
Yeah.
Heart rate goes down.
So we want to really look at that sense of touch, but we want to understand that when there's an abnormality in touch, there is a component of vata being involved. And that abnormal levels of vata in the body can translate into abnormal perception of touch, as well as abnormal desire or abnormal attachment to the sense of touch. Okay. Now we also take a look at the aspect of vata and what does it do. So this should be review from people who have taken basic anatomy and physiology of Ayurveda. So when we look at vata, we touched upon how it is related to the sense of touch, but vata supports sense organs as a whole. There's a lot of movement, receiving, sending, and translating signals when it comes to sense organs. But it is also responsible for our ability to speak, the quality of our speech, okay, the quality of the voice. When the voice is dry, raspy, crackling, or weak, we know that vata is involved. Whereas we would understand the opposite. If the voice is very deep and maybe obscured by mucus, that hoarse, heavy, not hoarse as in dry, but that heavy voice is more of a kapha influence. Now, when we take a look at vata, we also understand that it's responsible for breathing. It's responsible for heart function. It's responsible for memory and mind functioning. It's responsible for sneezing, yawning, hiccuping, burping, all of that movement of vata within the body. So what's a sneeze? Other than a stimuli of the cilia and the hairs and causing you to expel, it is a function of vata. Air is moving. A burp, air is moving. Flatulence, air is moving. Whereas when we look at functions like enthusiasm, that has a lot to do with vata. Enthusiasm. When we look at vata, we understand that it is responsible for waste elimination. Not only peristalsis of the intestines, but also elimination through urination, defecation, flatulation, ejaculation, menstruation, as well as childbirth. So when we look at these sub-doshas of vata, it'll become even more important to understand what is happening within my body. Mm-hmm. Why is my body not quite functioning just right? Well, who wakes up in the morning and asks themselves, is my body functioning optimally? We all should. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that we see upon awakening is, how do I feel? Do I awaken with enthusiasm? Do I awaken with zeal and passion? Do I awaken tired, cranky, discontented, face straight into my phone, constipated with bad breath? Mm-hmm. We need to understand that that should be a point of self-reflection and self-study immediately. Mm-hmm. Immediately. When we get up in the morning, all functions should be intact. And if not, let's say I wake up in the morning and one of my elements are not working in the way I know that they should. I ask myself, what did I do the day before? What element did I affect? Was I up too late? Was I out in weather? Did I eat something that clearly has affected my vata, pitta, or kapha? And what food item was it? Well, I need to know, is cheese vata aggravating or kapha aggravating? We know it's kapha aggravating. And even down to the self-study, yoga is very prized for its encouragement of disciplined self-study. All the way down to what time did you wake up, what time did you have a bowel movement, and what did that bowel movement function like? That tells a lot about what's happening in your internal system, and we should study it with great delight.
This is intense.
Sounds like Sheldon, right?
Because when we study the function of our gross physical body, the Anamaya Kosha, only then can we have those more optimal layerings out into the Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the definitions and the concepts of insanity today, mm-hmm. we will see that bowel movement in the morning is important to reflect upon, because it tells you what your body is doing and what you're doing to your body. Okay, so let's do a crash course review on vata imbalance. Okay, everybody is feeling comfortable with these concepts so far. Okay, so vata imbalance, we understand where it resides and what its qualities are. So the first thing we see is the word dry. Dry hair, dry nails, dry skin, dry eyes, dry mouth, dry mucous membranes. Where are our mucous membranes? eyes, nose, mouth, entire gastrointestinal system, stomach, small intestine, large intestine, colon, rectum. Okay, so if we have dry, cracked lips and dry stools, well, we know we've got vata going out of control. We have things that are now air related, because remember, vata is space and air, dry and cold. So we have symptoms of gas, bloating, constipation, and air related things like gurgling, belching, pressure, and pain. We have also pain that begins to manifest in its home. First and foremost, hip and back, pelvis, lower extremities. So we start seeing things like back pain, hip pain, knee pain, ankle pain, foot pain, pelvis pain. And then the sensations that ensue, like sciatica, numbness and tingling, particularly in the lower extremities that maybe are not related to a nerve root dermatome. But then we also can see that vata will move upward, out of its home, but also to its home. So dizziness, vertigo. We do understand that vata plays a role in the sense organs, but it also has a home in its ears. So vertigo is related to the ears. All right. We also see things like poor coordination, and we'll see when we get into the subtypes why that coordination plays a role. And then we see cold hands, cold feet, cold to the bone. I mean, have you ever been so cold that you felt like your bones were cold? And where does vata reside? In the bones. And then we also see it in the voice, a dry, harsh, weak, crackly type of voice. Okay? And we want to remember these when we start getting into our sub-doshas. So let's take a moment to take about a 2-minute break. Get up, move around. I want to do a little bit more break and move around today because this information is just going to be...
If you enjoyed that class segment and want to learn more about Ayurveda, stay tuned for more podcasts, be sure to subscribe, or visit my website healthiervibrations.com if you're interested in taking full-length classes on Ayurveda, yoga, health, and wellness. Until next time, take care.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.